Beast's been doing this without us knowing. Without anyone knowing, all these years. Hiding everything from us. Blotting it out, deleting it. The whole planet.
In order to save Moscow.
But why don't they... The West, the Americans, why don't they bomb the other cities? Look, I heard them myself. Petersburg, Vladivostok, Ekaterinburg. They're all out there, babbling away. On peaceful subjects. In Russian. They're all there. The country's out there. Are we the only ones who aren't? What about the war out there? Is it still going on?
Out there. What do you know about out there?
You listen to the broadcasts for half an hour. It's all a radio game, Artyom. How can you tell which are our side and which are paid mercenaries? Where their saboteurs are. What's really ours now, apart from the metro? Nothing. The metro is all we have left. Where is there any real live life out there? They've planted provocateurs everywhere, like spiders sitting in their webs. This is Vladivostok. Come and join us. This is Petersburg. Come to us. And everyone drawn into them from the villages is finished off on the spot. A bullet in the forehead. There isn't any Russia. Everything happened just as we feared it would. They blitzed us, crushed us, and occupied us. If we don't hold out here, if we let them know that we've survived, then we'll be next. We have only one way to save ourselves, Artyom. Pretend to be dead men. And build up our strength. So that we can go back.
But what if people simply come to us, our people, like that from the villages, not saboteurs, but our people, Russians, the genuine article?
There's a war on, Artyom. It's not possible to check everyone out. They're enemies, full stop.
What if they don't come from the east but the west?
All the main directions are covered.
And the jammers?
That's not the only station.
So I wouldn't have achieved anything anyway.
You wouldn't have had time, Artyom. It's a good thing Letyaga got you out of there. If you'd wrecked just one more pylon, I wouldn't have been able to strike a deal with them. Their orders were to take no prisoners.
Artyom drew in smoke, caught the unraveling words and lined them up.
You were watching me? When I climbed up to the top of the tricolor building? The high-rise?
The colonel's mouth twitched. Letyaga had blabbed.
We knew.
Why didn't you shut me up?
Because you're one of us. Even though I said those things to you.
But you yourself. When did you find out how?
I was put in the picture some time ago.
Artyom took a drag. He sat down on the floor with his back to the wall. There wasn't any chair. Now Miller, in his wheelchair, was actually taller than him. He ought to be taller than Artyom in any case. He used to be taller when he had legs instead of wheels.
You know,
Sviatoslav Konstantinovich, in our last conversation, you demonstrated conclusively that I was schizo.
I did that to protect you, so you wouldn't do everything that you have done.
But why couldn't you simply explain? Or am I schizo after all, eh?
Artyom.
You tell me. Am I schizo or not? Just tell me.
Listen. Your story about the Dark Ones, this certainty of yours that you could have saved the world, that you were chosen by them, that mankind will perish because of you. How can I tell you? How can I say something like that simply?
All that story of his about the Dark Ones. All that story of his. All of it.
None of it was important, right? The way we hit them with missiles? I didn't change anything, right? We never were the last people on Earth, here in Moscow. And the Dark Ones were never our only hope. I didn't save them because... just because... but nothing terrible happened. The world's still living the way it was before. But if I had saved them, well, there would have been someone to show in the zoo. Whether they were angels or not would be totally fucking irrelevant. Not a miracle, just a curiosity. Even I think it's funny. Funny what a stupid wanker I am, right, Sviatoslav Konstantinovich?
No.
It's funny,
Artyom protested. It was hard to sing, hard to pronounce the vowels, as if a goiter was getting in the way.
I did try to explain to you. I told you that you were too hung up on them, but in view of your condition, I didn't have any right to break secrecy about the shield.
My condition?
Artyom echoed.
Yes, definitely schizo. First I thought I was saving the world, then I thought I'd doomed it. Delusions of grandeur. You simply weren't sufficiently informed. You had to invent all the rest, but talking to you now, I'm convinced that you're reasoning perfectly soundly. It's not your fault.
But whose was it? Artyom looked into the glowing ash on his cigarette as if it was a gun barrel. It looked like a pocket-sized roll-up hell, always there with him.
I had to invent a lot of things for myself, he agreed.
If you think it was all easy for me...
I don't think that.
I was simply an idiot. What did I do it all for anyway? I thought I could take you, Anya before, and you, the boys, my stepfather, up onto the surface so we could live in a city together, in houses. I thought I pictured it, even in that monastery, all together, or set out on the railway to take a look at the country and the earth. It was a dream. If only the world was still there, that's what I thought, then I'd... But everybody knew. Do you think you need to lie to people? Why not tell them? Let them choose for themselves. If they want to go, let them go.
You're starting to talk like a fool again, Miller frowned. They'll leave Moscow, and then what? They'll be picked off out there, one by one, all of them. We're still together here. The metro is our fortress, a fortress besieged by the enemy. We're all part of the garrison, not just the order, but everybody, and we're not here forever. We're building up our strength to strike, for a counterattack. Is that clear? We'll leave this place, but not to surrender, not with a white flag. We won't run for it. We'll leave this place to take back what's ours. We have to win back our land. Is that clear or not? But right now there isn't anyone waiting for you out there.
There isn't anyone waiting for me here.
That's not true. I didn't summon you here to snivel, and that's not what I got you out of there for either.
What for, then?
Miller trundled back to his bunker desk, pulled out a drawer, rummaged in it for a while with a frown, and took something out.
There.
He rolled over to Artyom himself and held out his fist. He opened it slowly, not theatrically, but as if he was struggling with himself. There was a name tag lying on his palm. Engraved on one side was, "If not we, then who?" Artyom took it. He licked his dry lips and turned it over. Artyom Dark. The first name his mother gave him, and the surname he invented himself. His name tag. The same one that Miller had confiscated from him a year ago.
Take it.
What is this?
I want you to come back, Artyom. I've thought everything over, and I want you to come back into the order.
Artyom examined his surname obtusely. It was meaningless. It didn't signify anything anymore. It used to be his penitence. It was a burning cross, a reminder to him about himself. But now what was it? He wasn't to blame. That was over and done with. He ran his finger over the black Nilo inlay of the letters.
Something was hammering in his ears.
What for? Because I exposed Moscow's cover? I won't let them have you, Miller replied. You're one of us. Let them choke on that.
Artyom finished his cigarette. He stopped at the point where the tobacco singed his fingers. Them.
What do you need me for? Right now, every man counts. We have to stop the Reds, at any price, and sort out the fascists. It's the last chance to stop the war, Artyom. Otherwise, there won't be any more radio signals here, and not because of the jammers, but because of us. We're doing the West's work for them. They won't even get a chance to be surprised, do you understand?
I understand.
Well, are you with us or not? I'd just like to patch you up a bit and you can join the ranks.
And what about my men, Savelli and Leocha? What will you do with them?
We'll take them on for training, since you've already cleared them for access to a state secret.
Into the Order?
Into the Order. As far as I understand it, the three of you took the radio center. That's a good recommendation.
Was that all? Artyom ran his hand over his scalp. Sashenka had shaved it.
You got too much radiation, Miller said definitively. Let's put you in hospital. Stay there for a while, and we'll see what's what. And then...
Sviatoslav Konstantinovich, permission to ask a question. What was in the envelope?
In the envelope?
In the envelope we were supposed to deliver to the Reich.
Ah.
Miller frowned, trying to recall.
An ultimatum. An ultimatum from the Order. A demand to halt the operation immediately and withdraw all forces.
And that's all?
The colonel spun round on the spot. The fuming roll-up in his teeth described a circle, deploying a smokescreen. He squeezed the words out.
An ultimatum from the Order and Hansa. From both of us, jointly, full stop. They're waiting for you, Artyom.
Artyom straightened out the cord, stuck his head in the noose, lowered the name tag, and hid it under his shirt.
Thanks for having confidence in me.
And to himself he wondered why he hadn't been killed in the bunker. Was Letyaga to blame? If they'd stitched a red line in Artyom then, would he have been better off or worse off? Did he feel good now that he knew? What would he die of radiation sickness for now? He could have been here in Miller's office with the boys. He could have been letters on that sheet of paper, always drunk and always jolly.
Our fighting days aren't over yet, the colonel promised. Only we have to get you.
No need to put me anywhere. I know all about myself already. Do the boys have something on today?
Something on?
Letyaga told me. An operation against the Reds. Not enough men, he said.
Miller shook his head.
You can't even stay on your feet, Artyom. What can you do? Go with that man there. Take a rest. There's someone out there to socialize with.
I'll go with them. When is it?
Why the hell? Miller tossed his butt on the floor. Why can't you just sit still on your backside?
I really want to do something,
Artyom said, although it should have been one last thing.
Not just lie there, but finally do something meaningful.
It looks like a room for conjugal prison visits. Would you like to go for a walk?
Yes.
She pushed the door and walked out first. Artyom followed. Arbat Station was like the chambers of a royal palace, like the Russia of a dream, grandiose, white and gold and endless. There was somewhere to go here. Follow the perspective all the way to its vanishing point.
What happened to you?
Nothing.
I picked up a dose of radiation. If you mean the hairstyle.
I mean in general.
In general? In general, did you know about the radio?
No.
Didn't he ever tell you before?
No, Artyom, never. He didn't tell me anything about it until now.
I see. Well, then, that's it. There's nothing to add.
You got nothing to add?
What else is there to say about it? I found what I was looking for, that's all.
People looked round at them. At her. All those General HQ fossils and desk warriors at Arbat cracked their calcified joints, twisting their entire torsos if their crimson creased necks couldn't turn. After all, she was beautiful, Anya. Tall, light, haughty, with a boyish hairstyle, dashingly penciled-in eyebrows, angled upwards and outwards. And all of a sudden, here she was wearing a dress, too.
So, are you going to come back now?
She said it in a flat voice, as if she was the same on the inside as on the outside. As if her face was made of china, and she had a wind-up key in her back. Artyom's own back was suddenly running with sweat. There are some things you learn not to be afraid of, but he had never developed immunity to conversations like this. He strode along, counting off his silent steps to himself, and they simultaneously became the ticking meter of his awkwardness, cowardice and misery.
That's what your father assumes. He gave me my name tag back.
I meant us.
Well, if I accept his offer, and I have accepted it, then I won't have anywhere to go. I can't live at exhibition, can I? I'll be here, the barracks. There's some kind of operation today. They're sending me on it, and...
What's that got to do with anything? Stop it.
Listen, I can't see how... How we can start over again.
I want you to come back.
She spoke in the same way, calmly, firmly, quietly, with an impassive face. There was nowhere at Arbat Station for two people to talk. Better among strangers than with your own folks on the other side of the wall. The crowd jammed the signal. In a crowd, you could talk heart to heart.
It didn't work out for us, Anya. Everything went wrong for you and me.
It wasn't going right, so what?
That's all.
That's all? Have you given up?
No, it's not that.
So you didn't want it anyway?
And you just cut and run. You used some idiotic excuse to cut and run.
I'm telling you that I need you.
I need you, Artyom. Do you realize what saying that costs me? Me? What it costs me to say that?
We can't glue it all back together.
Glue what back together?
The story of you and me. Everything in it happened wrong. This thing and that thing. Everything. Too many mistakes.
So you just scuttle off. Too many mistakes. I think I'll be off now. Was that it?
No.
Yes, it was. And I was probably supposed to think, if he leaves, then okie dokie. It looks like there's nothing to glue back together anyway. Was that it?
No.
What are you...
I'm not going to talk about this in public.
No? But you're the one who brought me out for a walk. A real strategist.
Stop it.
Or was it like this? I'm a proud woman. I told you that myself. And you probably decided, well then, she won't grovel if I just run away from her without saying goodbye, will she? She'll hang herself before she comes crawling to find out why I dumped her.
I didn't dump you.
You ran away.
Anya, come on. Why are you doing this? Like some stupid woman. You're not a woman, Anya. You're a real man. You're my brother in arms. You're Letyaga with boobs.
Oh, please. Tell me. It's all over for us, Anya. Tell me to my face. No more whining. And explain why.
Because it won't work out for us anyway, because everything was wrong.
But you really are like some stupid woman. Can you be a bit more specific? What's wrong? The fact that my father was your commander? That he was against our marriage? That you had hang-ups? That you were more in love with him than with me? That he thought you were insane? that you are always comparing yourself with him? That he was a genuine hero and the savior of his homeland? That you wanted to be him first? That you couldn't simply be with me?
Shut up.
Why? You can't say all this out loud. Let me say it for you. Someone has to.
Because I don't love you. Because I fell out of love with you. Because... Yes, I don't know how to tell you that.
Because you're afraid of me.
No.
Because you're afraid of my father.
Oh, go to hell. Just fuck off, will you? That's all.
People are turning to look at you. It's embarrassing.
I have someone else.
Ah. So that's what you found. You looked for it and found it. You should have told me. You should have said, Anya, I was simply looking in the wrong place. There wasn't anyone up on the surface. But underground, someone turned up in a week.
Go ahead. Pile it on. You spent the whole year training those skills of yours on me.
You never believed me.
You didn't believe me, and you didn't believe in me. Like your daddy, he called me schizo too. He still does, to this very day. You take after him.
I'm like my mother.
You're like your daddy. Anya stopped walking. People stumbled into them, swore, gaped at Anya's pedigree points, forgot their annoyance, and went frothing on with the current. They were very preoccupied with their underground business, as if there was nothing in the world but the metro.
Let's have a drink.
I'd like to get some sleep before the operation.
You owe me. So shut up and let's go.
He'd already realized that he had to do it. And do it before this operation. Before finally doing something meaningful. He owed her more than he did anyone else. They found themselves an intellectual dive in a pedestrian passage, sank down onto the stuffed sacks, and drew the curtains. Now it was as if they'd been left alone together.
How come you're here? He sent his men for me. Told them to tell me that you'd given me my freedom. A fine way to separate. Sending the message via my father and two armed cretins. I didn't want it to be like that. You're a brave man, Artyom. I respect you.
I'm a shit, okay? Accepted. But what now? You've come back to your ideal daddy now, haven't you, eh? That's it. Hurrah! Why eat my brains out?
You're a real cretin, after all.
Accepted. A shit and a cretin.
Have you never wondered why I went away to Exhibition Station with you? Never wondered what I saw in you? Back here, the entire order, the whole herd of studs trailed after me, one hero after another, all drooling and trying to get a sniff under my tail, including that hunter of yours, by the way. So why you?
Yes, I wondered.
Well, maybe I didn't want a hero. I don't want a psychopath. I don't want a husband who saws a man's head off with a knife and doesn't even blink when the blood spurts out. I don't want that. I don't want a husband like my father. Is that clear? I wanted a good, decent, normal human being. Someone like you. Like you used to be. Who does everything he possibly can to avoid killing people. And I wanted him to have children like that. Kind.
People like that die underground.
People of all kinds die underground. So do we stop having children?
That's right, we stop.
When were you planning to live? With me. Have a life.
They drank without clinking glasses. Artyom took a long swallow. His empty stomach soaked it up immediately. His blood warmed up and set the globe spinning. I can't live, Anya. I don't know how to anymore.
Who then?
Your father will pick someone for you. Someone worthy. Not a schizo.
Are you a cretin? Are you listening to me at all or just yourself? Who will my father pick for me? He washed me in the shower himself until I was 13. 13, do you understand that? I ran away from him to you, to have a normal life, to live. And you want to be him? Him or Hunter? I don't know which.
I don't... Damn it. Do I have to hear this?
Why not? Are you afraid of getting all emotional? Are you afraid you'll have to take me away?
No, but...
Then wait till you hear what happened to my mother.
She died.
She was ill. You were still little.
She poisoned herself with bad vodka. She drank because he beat her every other day. How do you like that, eh? How's that for a hero, Daddy?
Anya.
Go and join his army. Has my daddy forgiven you?
But he adores you. Could he ever?
No. Beating the heart out of my mother was enough for him. Daddy takes good care of me. Yes, he adores me. Whatever I say, that's the way things will be, just as long as I sit on his knees.
Wait, he... Why did he... When I was in the radio center, when I was just about to... When they were about to storm the place, you... Where were you then?
Anya finished off her drink in one. Her eyes were red, quite unable to cry, just like Artyom's. She'd made up her eyelashes with mascara, he realized suddenly.
Anya. Eyelashes.
I told him straight. If anything happens to my man, he has to be reminded about that from time to time.
Artyom grinned. He tried to do it contemptuously, but his face didn't have the strength.
Hey, another one.
And for me.
That's what it's for. That's why.
To my mother.
Anya raised her glass tumbler.
To my mother who drank because she married a hero. So you got it all wrong. I'm like her, not like him, Artyom.
He reached out his own glass in his numb hand and struck glass against glass feebly and listlessly.
She was from Vladivostok. When she put me to bed, she used to tell me about the beaches, about the ocean. Once she'd put me down, she'd reached for her hip flask. You see, I knew how to close my eyes, as if I was asleep, and peep through my eyelashes. How's Vladivostok getting on? Does it answer?
Yes.
How are you doing, brother? Okay? No temperature? Your cheeks are burning up.
I'm fine.
Are you sure you want to drag yourself back up on top again?
I'm sure.
Did you go to the infirmary?
Yes. They painted my back with green antiseptic.
Okay. When we get back from the assignment, I'll carry you there.
The same off-roader was waiting in front of the library with its engine running, and behind it was a large gray truck with toothy overriders on its bumpers. Savelli and Leocha, wearing black uniforms under their protective suits, exchanged glances.
This, said Artyom. Our men are inside there, don't worry. Hansa just lent us the truck. Where would we get anything like that?
True enough.
They started with a squeal and set off in convoy towards New Arbat Street. Letyaga took Artyom with him in the off-roader. He kept looking round at him with some unspoken thought from the front seat.
What's this assignment? Artyom asked.
It's at Komsomol Station,
Letyaga explained.
You'll see.
They hurtled along empty New Arbat Street. Artyom didn't have time to remember anything. Where had all the living beasts of Moscow disappeared to? Why had they fled? Moscow, a city of stone, stood as empty as if it was Babylon, smothered by the sands 3,000 years ago. They raced as far as the Garden Ring, turned where they needed to go, straight across the funny lines of prohibition on the asphalt, and drove past the massive hulks of hotels without any guests and office centers without any clerks, and then past the pointed building of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, a bald mountain for sorcerers.
I wonder how foreign affairs are going now.
I don't poke my nose in,
said Letyaga, looking straight ahead.
Everyone has his own job.
But someone listens to the radio, don't they? To find out how people are doing in general, how the enemy's getting on, what he's getting up to, what cunning tricks.
How?
Letyaga objected.
With the jammers working away.
That's true.
Artyom kneaded the rubber of his face. After the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, they dived into the narrow side streets and stopped at an abandoned mansion behind a tall fence. Some embassy or other. A ragged scrap of the unknown country's flag was dangling there, washed white by the vicious rain. They sounded the agreed signal on the horn. The silent gates opened to let the convoy into the courtyard. Inside, figures with the badges of the Order swarmed over the vehicles, making sure their visitors hadn't picked anyone up along the way. Artyom clambered out and thought he saw a familiar pair of eyes behind glass saucers.
"What's this?"
No one explained. Doors opened, and the figures dragged green zinc boxes with stenciled inscriptions out of the mansion and into the truck. Two at a time, three at a time, then more, and more. Boxes of cartridges. They worked deftly and got the job done in a minute. They saluted, signed some kind of document for irrelevant bookkeeping, saw the vehicles out through the gates, and the mansion became uninhabited again.
"Why so many?"
Artyom asked Letyaga.
"For Komsomol Station,"
Letyaga repeated.
"What's there? The red line intersects with Hansa," said Artyom, suddenly realizing. "Is that where the front line is now? Has Hansa already joined in the war?"
"Yes, it has."
"What are we doing? Are our men there already? We're pitching in for Hansa, right? I mean us, the Order?"
"That's right."
Letyaga had obviously been forbidden to talk openly with Artyom. He spat the words out through his teeth, but since Artyom was guessing everything for himself, he couldn't refuse to confirm things.
"Our boys are there already? Are the cartridges for them? Are they holding the Reds?"
"Yes."
This is the bunker all over again, eh? Right, brother? It's us again, with the Reds again. And the same thing, if we don't hold them, no one will hold them."
"It could all happen again,"
Letyaga admitted reluctantly.
"I'm glad we're going there," Artyom declared out loud. "That's the right kind of assignment."
And it happened again at night. The Garden Ring Road, the rusty lumps of cars in the headlights, the chasm between the buildings, plastic bags flying through the air, the oxidized moon outlining the clouds faintly. The engines growled and Artyom felt drowsy. Past Svetnoy Boulevard, along the ramps of the flyover, through tricky side streets and along secret trails that the dead didn't know, along jolting tram lines to the station square, to Komsomol Station. Three stations, trains to the east from one, all the way as far as Anya's Vladivostok, trains to the north, to St. Petersburg, from the second, and trains to Kazan and onward into the underbelly of Russia from the third. Wherever you wanted to go, there were the tracks. They started right behind the buildings. Put a trolley on them, lay into the levers, and roll on and on for as long as your strength holds out. All the wonders of the world are waiting for you. But no, you can't go anywhere, right? "What do you mean there isn't any lid, Sviatoslav Konstantinovich?" "There it is. There's the lid." They drove up onto the pavement and set their vehicles right up against the doors of the metro pavilions.
"Now move it," Letyaga ordered. "This isn't our ground."
They opened the doors instantly, dispersed to form a circle around the vehicles, and lowered their night vision goggles onto their foreheads. At night, on enemy ground, anything could happen. They unloaded the zinc boxes, passing them along a line of men. Artyom was the last, standing by the cracked wooden doors. He took the boxes and stacked them in a pyramid. He had a strange feeling, calm. He saw himself behind the breastwork of a trench, clutching the stock of an automatic rifle in his finger and catching bullets with his forehead. It had been good in the bunker. Everything clear, everything comprehensible. He really wanted to go into the bunker again. He wanted to use up these cartridges, every single one of them. Or as many as he had time for. Now he didn't need to say goodbye to Sasha, to make up with Shukoi, or Sea Hunter. He had nothing to say to all of them. He didn't have any full stops for them. Let everything break off at a comma.
"Now follow me."
They each took two zinc boxes and stepped into the half-ruined pavilion with them in the dark, as if they were carrying children in their arms. Letyaga had forbidden them to switch on their torches. They started moving down the chipped escalator, groping at the cold contours with their night vision. The only thermal glimmers blazing red on their screens came from below, the heat of human bodies trying to warm the earth from the inside. And from down there, below, they heard an indistinct buzzing, like the moaning of a beehive. It seemed to come from below, but also from everywhere at the same time. They couldn't look round. They were running down the slippery steps in a line, and it would be a bad idea to stumble. But from out of some ventilation openings or other, or perhaps through the thin walls, they heard hoarse howling and muffled roaring, like the wind in pipes, but in pipes welded shut, with no hope, and with every step down it got louder, and it got hotter and hotter.
"What is it?"
Leoka panted as he ran.
"The red line's down there. There's something going on there, but that's not where we're going."
They stopped somewhere.
"Now to the left."
They set off without any shadows, moving along the walls, flashes of red in the blackness. The warmth flowing out through cracks in the wall meant that somewhere here there was something alive, warming itself, breathing out steam. But there wasn't anyone coming towards them. Maybe it was some kind of secret passage. Were they coming at the enemy from the rear? Was there an ambush here? Why couldn't they hear the battle? Hadn't it begun yet? Had they gotten there just ahead of the beginning? All those cartridges. With that many, you could hold the line for a month. But where were the other men from the Order waiting? Was that why they couldn't turn on their torches? So they wouldn't give them away?
"Now march!"
Someone inserted red markers into the darkness up ahead, little human figures. They heard voices superimposed on the racket made by the ventilation. Warmth lived and flowed along in the pipes on the ceiling, the extraction system, and in the drainage gratings under their feet. Apparently there were large rooms nearby where stoves were lit, light shone, and people whispered to each other about something, but Artyom and the other members of the Order were being kept in the dark.
"Halt!"
They stopped under the grating of a brazier in the wall. Several crimson figures loomed up ahead. One, more like a bull than a man, was blazing furiously, consumed in flames, and two were blurred and indistinct as if their blood was cold. A conversation trickled out through the brazier. The words stuck together and fused, nibbled round the edges, and the pipe echo reduced the tone of all the voices to one, tinny, so it was impossible to understand who was talking to whom, as if someone with a metal funnel in his larynx was reciting a monologue.
"Are they all here?"
"Yes, they're all here. How many?"
"Exactly as agreed, 20,000. 20,400 units to be precise. I hope this will solve our problem. Our joint problem. It should solve it. It always has solved it. So shall we shake on it? Thank you for your flexibility." "Oh no, and of course we would like to avoid similar excesses in the future. You know perfectly well that the situation simply got out of control. It's not our fault. An initiative from below. A matter of control. Our agreements always remain in force. Will you do something to restore the balance?" "We have already. Well, and I'd like to talk separately about these rumors. You know, brother against brother. Malicious tongues are wagging. There could have been a leak. No, I assure you, that's not in our interest. We're sticking with our relationship." "All right then, may I take this?" "Yes, we'll issue instructions." "Thank you, Maxim Petrovich. Thank you, Alexei Felixovich."
"This way. Forward march!"
Lechyaga commanded.
"Towards those three!"
"Alexei Felixovich, Felixovich, Felixovich. Thank you, Alexei Felixovich. Yes, sir, Alexei Felixovich. Accepted." Artyom's forearm started itching. There were already scabs there instead of tattoos.
"Right, you monster moles! Over here, quick!"
Someone growled out of the darkness.
"Hand over that scrap metal!"
A hoarse voice. Low and chesty. A small torch lit up. The beam started skipping about close to the ground, over the green boxes and the stenciled inscriptions counting the zinc containers.
"One, two, dismissed. What are you standing there for? Circulate. Three, four, that's it. You've delivered. Take a stroll. Five, six."
Artyom's turn was coming soon. His heart was pounding now after he'd recognized the other man. His head was blazing hot already, but he kept waiting for his turn, to see from close up, to know for certain.
"Seven, eight, put them over here, next, 9, 10, that's it, now you're free."
They were handing over these cartridges to someone. All 20 zinc boxes, they hadn't brought them here so that the members of the Order could hold the line. all that was required of them was to deliver 20,000 cartridges and hand them over to someone. That was the entire assignment.
11, 12.
Artyom heard that. His turn was approaching. They're rabbits, docile rabbits. They're not going to run anywhere. 12. But down below here you'll croak. 13, docile rabbits. 14. He put his two boxes down on the floor. He groped with an uncertain hand at the pockets of his tactical assault vest. He pulled it out and missed the button.
Next! What are you doing stuck here?
The little torch's beam jabbed into Artyom's eyes, leaving the stenciled letters, the same way as the barrel of the revolver had jabbed into his ear. Then Artyom raised his own torch against it, long and weighty, 1,000,000 candle power, and he clicked the button. In the harsh 1,000,000 candle beam, he could see the man had shriveled a bit, and turned pale and wrinkled while he was on his way back from the next world. But here he was, standing confidently with his fat legs straddled wide, clutching the green zinc boxes presented to him with one possessive hand, and protecting himself against the light with the other. Shot recklessly by Artyom, and not killed at all by his snot-nosed little bullets. In a new Red Army uniform, sewn to order to fit his bullish torso. Gleb Ivanovich Svinolup. Chapter 18. Active Service.
What the fuck are you doing?
Letyaga smacked the torch hard, and the thick beam somersaulted, lashing across other superfluous faces, revealing the walls, the floor, the ceiling. So they were all there after all. A corridor. A door. Men. The men screwing up their eyes and swearing. Two images emerged side by side, looking familiar to Artyom. One fat-lipped and balding, his silvery temples sheared with electric clippers, wearing an officer's pea jacket. The other one sharp-nosed, with bags under his eyes and neatly trimmed hair. Where could Artyom know him from? It was as if they'd met in a dream. While the torch was tumbling into the corner, Artyom had time to grab hold of his automatic, but not to aim it at Svinolup. They grabbed hold of his arms and the gun and tore them apart. The light went out. In the pitch-black darkness, various strangers threw themselves on the two familiar-looking red silhouettes, shielding them against bullets.
"They're Reds!"
Artyom wheezed.
"Let go of me! We brought the cartridges for the Reds! They're Reds!" "Easy now. Easy. Easy. Now what kind of shit have you got shouting his head off here, eh?"
A hand in a fingerless leather glove, Letyaga's shut Artyom's mouth. The taste was like gun oil, diesel, gunpowder, and old blood. Artyom sank his teeth into it, tugged, and shouted God only knew what with his mouthful. Chewing on it didn't help. Letyaga had no nerves. The device was torn off his forehead, and his night vision went blind.
"Don't touch him!"
Liocha's voice, and the clatter of Liocha's automatic rifle.
"Sava, they're battering our man!"
"Let him go! Let him go!"
That was Savelli.
"Or I'll drop everyone right now!"
"Damir! Omega!"
There was a grunt in the blackness. The gurgle of a strangled throat. The flash of a burst of fire, into the ceiling. And someone wheezed, tried to break free, and howled frenziedly.
"Do we finish them?"
someone asked in the darkness, breathing fitfully.
"So you specials have a few problems of your own." "Ha, ha, ha."
The invisible Svinolup chuckled.
"Right, guys?"
"No, not now. Bring them this way. Follow me."
Letyaga's deep bass.
"The colonel said if they pulled anything flaky, I know what the colonel said. Bring them and follow me."
"What happened?"
A familiar voice. Not Svinolup's, but different, weary and lordly. At the sound of it, a vision of a brothel rose up in front of Artyom's unseeing eyes, with curtains lit from the inside.
"That's it. Sorry about the little hitch. Let's take them and leave,"
Letyaga said. Hands of steel dragged Artyom along the floor. Behind him, his comrades started jerking their legs about. but the soldiers of the Order were well trained. You couldn't break their grip.
Bring them over here. Put them there. Right, that's all. I'll sort this out myself. You go up, and you keep your ugly mugs to the floor.
The colonel said to waste them all if anything started up.
Waste us? Are you totally berserk? Savelli shouted, coming round. Damirchik, I remember. I'll handle this. Have you searched them? Are they clean?
They're clean.
Right then, move on. I'll be quick.
Okay, guys. They drawled their agreement dubiously.
Let Yaga do it. It's his sidekick.
Heels clattered, seemingly moving away, but also dubiously dissembling, apparently going up, but as if they were just moving aside. The oil-soaked leather released Artyom's mouth.
That's Svinolop. The Reds KGB. We gave the Reds cartridges. The Reds, we gave them cartridges. Have you got any clue you're doing?
I have my orders, brother,
Latyaga replied gently.
Deliver. What I deliver to who is none of my business.
The Reds, cartridges. The two of us fought them in the bunker. Our boys died there. Number 10, Ullman, Schliapa. The Reds killed them. Do you remember that? They almost killed you and me. How could you all help them?
We were told to collect the stuff from the depot and bring it here and hand it over.
You're lying!
Artyom yelled, blowing his top.
You're fucking lying, you bastard! You scumbag, you're a traitor to them and me, all of them who were killed. Our boys, both of you. You and that old rat. You've betrayed everybody. What was it for? What did they croak for, so we could give the Reds weapons? Cartridges?
Easy now, easy. It's aid, it's not cartridges. They've got a famine. They're going to buy mushrooms with those cartridges. From Hansa. All of their own harvest has rotted.
I don't believe you. Any of you.
What a lot of crap,
Leocha said into the stone floor.
What about you? Do you believe it? You?
My job.
What is that?
Your job? Do you think I didn't hear? You were told to waste me. If I didn't swallow this, right? What does flaky mean? Was I supposed to swallow this? You and me? The two of us? Giving the Reds cartridges?
I'm sorry.
I'll never forgive you. Not you. One blood, you bastard. Aha, you. How do you feel right now? How can you believe me now, Letyaga? What in? Now? What's it all for? For the rations?
You... don't you?
Come on. You know, right? I couldn't give a shit about anything. I'm going to croak anyway. Shoot, you shit. Carry out your orders. Group A fucking miners. Only let my guys go. These two. What do you want with them? The old man doesn't owe them anything. There's nothing to get even for.
Letyaga said nothing, breathing loudly through his nose. Something metallic hovered tensely close beside Artyom, but he didn't feel the death that was already and waiting to happen.
Well?
The stinking leather shoved all the sounds back into Artyom again.
Get up, you two,
Letyaga ordered in a whisper.
I'm sorry, Artyom.
A pistol cracked into his ear. Once, twice, three times. Nothing changed. In pitch darkness, how can you distinguish life from death? That was how. From the taste of blood and diesel, gunpowder and oil in his mouth. He was alive.
Hold hands,
Letyaga whispered.
If anyone comes adrift, I'll waste him on the spot.
They didn't try to run from him blindly. They put their trust in Letyaga one last time. Letyaga's palm led Artyom, silenced now, hurrying along, and the others followed him in a chain.
Hey, how are you doing down there? All done?
Someone called to them from the escalator.
Now at a run, said Letyaga. If they catch us, they'll snuff me with you.
They ran, not looking and not seeing, holding each other's cold fingers, slippery with the sweat of imminent death.
Where are you going?
Someone roared from above them.
Halt!
Letyaga didn't seem to know where. He was simply running, anywhere. After 30 seconds, something started whistling around them, and boots started clattering behind. They turned off somewhere, stumbling and crashing into each other, getting in each other's way.
"Who is he, this Felixovich?"
Artyom demanded from Letyaga as he ran.
"Besolov? Who is this Besolov? Who has our old man sold us to, eh?"
A pillar of light shot down from the sky. The four of them shied away from it like cockroaches. They poked their noses into a dead end and turned back. The running feet moved away, then started moving closer again. And again that indistinct, chesty droning oozed out of the cracks in the blackness. Like at the very beginning, when they were just coming down into Komsomol station. And again, mute bullets zipped past close by, bounced against the walls, and flew off at random, sparing them reluctantly.
"Besolov, who is he?"
Artyom persisted.
"Who is he? You know, Letyaga, you know, tell me."
Letyaga stopped, confused. Maybe because everywhere here was equally black, everywhere was equally far from warm, red life, and there was no way to find any direction. Letyaga switched on his torch.
"There they are. That way, over there."
They were standing by a welded grill. Letyaga took aim and shot off the padlock. Three of them jerked the bars outwards, and they squeezed in and crawled. Crawled away from death on all fours. Maybe the others wouldn't bother to chase after them. The groaning was growing louder as the choir warmed up. It blew into their faces like a wind from the pipe they were crawling along. Artyom's eardrums, heart and spleen were already vibrating in tune with it. And the men behind were keeping up, trying to carry out their orders, tickling the back of his head with their torch beams, trying to choose a target. Letyaga came across something, some kind of iron cover. The droning on the other side of it was as loud as if the cover was screwed onto a pressure cooker on the stove and about to be blown off by an explosion of steam at any moment. He pressed down hard on the cover. No use. The rust had already put down roots. The salt had grafted the bolt to the frame. A bullet zipped through the air and bit the last one in line. Savelli.
"Get against the wall!"
Letyaga stretched out his hand and turned his torch on their pursuers, dazzling them. "Zap, zap, zap," he replied in lead, and Artyom thought he wounded someone. In the sealed-off pipe it was hard to miss. And from behind, they replied generously in kind.
"Give me some fucking help, will you?"
Two of them stamped hard, then three. The iron in their path hesitated and then slumped down. Savelli caught another bullet and squealed, and they dragged his limp body after them through the hole that had burst open. They tumbled straight out of the ceiling of the tunnel into a thousand screaming people. They fell on their heads and didn't get hurt. Now it was clear what the groaning was.
Food!
Artyom had never seen so many people at once anywhere. It was an unusual tunnel. Immensely wide, to take two sets of tracks at once, with right-angle vaults, and it was completely flooded with people for as far as the eye could see. There was a whole sea of people here, and the sea was raging. The four of them had fallen out about 50 meters from the station, and they started sculling through the living bodies in that direction towards the light. They pulled Savelli behind them, not looking to see where the bullets had hit him. Savelli caught hold of Artyom's collar, pulled himself up from his low tank driver's height, and shouted into Artyom's ear in a whisper. Artyom shrugged it off. "Come on, what is all this? You've still got years and years of life ahead of you." They couldn't just stop and stand still. The huge crowd was swaying, and it could crush them against the wall or trample them underfoot. And they had to keep going to get lost in the crush. Their pursuers could follow them out any second now. The bodies here were gaunt and exhausted, with the skin hanging loose on them. Forcing a way through them, they felt it. The fleshless bones snagged on them as they moved past, like the ribs of a kitchen grater, seeming to plane a little bit of something off each one of them, for themselves. It was the famine that had gathered them together and herded them here from all over the Red Line, Artyom realized. But why here?
"Mushrooms!"
It was strange that the people could even stay on their feet. There couldn't be any strength in those emaciated stick legs, but not all of them could stay up. Every now and then, Artyom stumbled over something that had given in. His boots trod in something soft. Stomachs, maybe? And slithered off something hard and round. But the living could no longer weep for anything except mushrooms. It was easy to guess the right direction. All the heads in the tunnel were turned the same way. And in between their roaring, the people quietly hummed the word, Komsomol. They moved along with all the others and through them towards Komsomol station, with just the backs of people's heads turned towards them. Short-cropped, or with hair hanging loose, shaved, grey or white, as if people here got by without faces. Artyom looked back and saw one black figure in an order balaclava dive out of the ceiling like a little toy soldier, followed by another one. Letyaga hadn't carried out his orders, but the others couldn't disobey. The heaving surf swallowed up the divers. Now they would start swimming to find Artyom and drown him. He redoubled his efforts and walked on with his knees bent, so that his black uniform would be hidden behind other people's brownish shoulders, and he tugged the others down too. They couldn't talk to each other. The weeping and roaring of the human sea drowned everything out, so all they were doing was opening and closing their mouths without making a sound. Everything they tried to say something about turned into mushrooms. They got through to Komsomol station, the radial line station, the red one. They looked up at it from the tracks. It was immense, solemn and terrifying. The station was a bit like Lenin Library Station in some ways. It was also high enough for two stories and looked absolutely unearthly. Right-angled vaults with nothing rounded off, immensely tall columns, classical ones, with frizzy ears of wheat thrusting up against the ceiling. It was all about bread at this station, all about the most important thing of all, an atheist's temple of the harvest. With columns faced in blackish-brown marble with sprays of red, the walls by the tracks faced in tiles, like torture chambers, and the ears of wheat just below the ceiling cast in bronze, like swords. The crowd was standing on the platform and on the tracks. The people on the tracks were trying to clamber up onto the platform, and the people clinging onto the platform were trying not to fall onto the tracks. And as they sang their hymn of hunger, with a heavy groan from the chest, they all shoved forward towards somewhere farther ahead. The station was in semi-darkness. Torch beams falling from above roamed over white and naked craniums, like over the crests of waves, as if they were searching for survivors of a shipwreck in stormy water. Artyom threw his head back and looked up. Komsomol station had a second level. Balconies running round the whole station about 4 meters above the platform, and those balconies hadn't been flooded yet. There were only Red Army men with automatic rifles standing there, with the barrels propped on a handrail for convenience. But who were they supposed to aim at? It couldn't be everyone at once. There were officers standing spaced out between the soldiers. They were trying to shout something through the loudspeakers, but the roar of the crowd blotted out their hoarse, electrical straining. Artyom and the others clambered up onto the platform over shoulders, over heads, over each other. He looked back again and spotted black wool faces in the crowd, and they spotted his black figure too. He squatted down, sweating. All his wounds started talking to him at once, the shoulder with a hole in it, the shattered knee, the lacerated back. They said, "No more, that's enough, stop, stay here." Up ahead he caught sight of where everyone wanted to go so desperately. At the center of the hall, a broad marble stairway descended from the balconies into the people like an emergency escape chute. There used to be another two, one at each end of the hall, but they had been demolished and walled off, so the central one was the only way up, and into the connecting passage to the circle line, to Hansa. That was what the crowd was pushing towards. 3 lines of border guards were standing on the steps. Barbed wire had been wound onto the portable barriers, and on the intermediate landing, machine guns snarled in both directions from a thoughtfully installed nest. absolutely no way up had been left here.
"Mushrooms!"
the station roared. It seemed like the whole line was roaring. Mothers with bundles in their arms. Some had silent ones, some had ones that were still squealing. Fathers with goggle-eyed children on their shoulders hold them up higher, higher, so the dead can't trip them up and drag them onto the floor, down to the bottom. They all wanted to get to the stairway, to the steps. They all knew that no one here would give them any mushrooms. They all needed to get to the circle line. There was no other road to life left. Why had the crowd held back from rushing the thin fences? Basically no more than air framed by pipes and wire. People were already pressing towards them, getting close to those barbs, eyeing them and the Red Army men hungrily. The Red Army men brandished their rifle butts at the hungry people, but the red line hadn't been crossed yet from either side. How had such a huge horde of people gathered at Komsomol Station? Had anyone tried to stop them leaving their own stations farther along the line? And what had happened to whoever had tried? Artyom didn't know. But they kept on arriving out of the tunnel, clambering onto the platform over other people's shoulders, packing themselves in tighter and tighter, 3 people or 5 or 7 to a square meter. It had to burst any moment now, that soap bubble membrane between the soldiers and the people. The final sand grain seconds before the atomic explosion were running out. It was appallingly stuffy in here, and it was as hot as in a foundry. There was nowhere at Komsomol Station for those who had come here to get any oxygen. The people breathed rapidly and shallowly, and the station was shrouded in haze from the water they breathed out of themselves. Artyom looked back again. Where were the black faces in the crowd? And he glimpsed them closer now, as if they could sense where to look for him and nothing could put them off the trail. But something was happening up under the ceiling. All those people, thousands of them, took each other's example and started turning their faces upwards. A resolute convoy was striding rapidly along the balcony, led by a surging tank-like figure, Svinolup. It was eerily reminiscent of the service that a priest and his assistants who were invited in from somewhere had once held at exhibition during the Dark One's time. The armed escorts were carrying something, stopping beside each of the snipers at the balustrade. Svinolup conferred some of it on them. Artyom's faltering heart sank like a stone as he realized what they were being blessed with up there. The very cartridges that he and Letyaga had brought an hour earlier. So there it was. The cure for famine.
"There's your aid."
Artyom grabbed Letyaga by the shoulder and jabbed his finger upwards.
"Up there! That's yours!"
When he'd gone round all the marksmen, pepping up each one, Svinolup walked down to the sandbag nest on the landing between the stories. His retinue started feeding the machine gun crews with cartridges. The major whispered something in the ears of the crew's commanding officers and slapped them on the shoulder. The people down below were in turbulent mood, but sensing what was going on up above, they started falling dumb. The choir turned ragged and lost its nerve. Svinolup addressed the people in a booming voice.
"Comrades," he trumpeted, "in the name of the leadership of the Red Line, I request you to respect the laws of our state, including the law on the freedom of assembly. Please disperse."
"Mushrooms!"
someone shouted.
"Mushrooms!"
the crowd yelled in support.
"Let us go!"
a woman's voice squealed above the roar of the crowd.
"Let us go, you monster! Let us out!"
Svinolup nodded, as if in agreement.
"We have no right to allow you into the territory of another state. I demand that you disperse."
"We're starving. My little daughter died. Save us. Let us out. I can barely stand. My belly hurts."
"But you're so fat, you guzzler. Let us go. Let us out,"
the crowd said in a babble of voices.
"To Hansa and food."
They won't let these people into Hansa, Artyom thought dully and slowly in the sultry heat. They'll never let these people into Hansa. Hansa knows everything. About the jammers, about the cartridges, about the Reich, about living space, about the Reds, about the famine. They won't let these people in.
This is an act of provocation, and those who call for it are provocateurs.
Svinolup rapped out after running a slow, meticulous gaze over the crowd. Everyone there seemed to be remembering his face so they could get even afterwards.
And we won't waste words on provocateurs.
We're dying. All of us, we're exhausted. Have pity.
Lord, deliver us.
Rescue us.
Don't let it happen.
Don't let us perish. Just a crumb, some broth, not for me, for the child. You scum, let us go.
The crowd stopped talking normally and started groaning again with its chest made of clay.
Mushrooms!
The people at the back moved closer to the footbridge, the stairway, and Svinolup, and they squeezed the people at the front. The people at the front breathed out together to make space for themselves. And that exhalation set the station, this shrine of the harvest, trembling. The people wanted to go up the steps to the inner sanctum, as if bread or wine had been made ready for them there. But there was nothing in there. Only a sacrificial altar. And a knife. Now it would all happen. Now everything would be hot and slippery. Svinolup couldn't talk them out of this, and he wasn't even trying. They had to be saved, stopped from, gotten out of here. Why did they all have to die here? They could carry on living. He had to do it. Artyom was being swayed together with the others, towards the barbed wire and back again. The swaying made him feel sick. He only had a little drop of the beggarly air left. And he used that drop to say it, first in a whisper, then in a loud voice.
There's nothing for you there. Don't go to Hansa. Nobody there wants you. Do you hear me? All you people, don't go, please, don't.
Not many people heard Artyom, but Svinolup heard. He was standing quite near.
You see, there's no one waiting for you there,
he said languidly, supporting Artyom for form's sake.
Your place is here.
But where, then? Where to? Where can we go?
The people close by became agitated, and the agitation started rippling out in circles from Artyom. They don't know anything, do they? Artyom remembered. They believe there isn't anything apart from the metro, apart from Moscow. They're all lied to. Told that the world was burnt out, that they're alone. They're being held in these tunnels under the ground. Nobody even explains anything to them about our enemies. They've just been locked up here underground, in the darkness.
Go up on the surface. You should go up. The world is still intact up there. We're not the only ones who survived. You hear me? We're not alone. Moscow isn't alone. There are other cities. I've heard them myself. On the radio, you can leave this place and go anywhere, wherever you want. Live wherever you want. Everything's wide open. The whole earth is wide open.
People started looking round, trying to find him. And Artyom realized that this was the moment, right now, when he had to tell them. Tell them so that they would know and could decide for themselves. Someone lent their arms to support him. Someone lent him their back. And he started climbing up them, to stand on other people's shoulders so that he could be heard.
You've been deceived. They're all still up there. Petersburg, Ekaterinburg, Vladivostok. It's still there, all of it. We're the only ones down here, in the pig shit. We slurp it down, we breathe it. The sun's up there, but we guzzle pills instead. They keep us here, in the darkness, in this stifling air. They keep us here. They shoot us, they hang us, and we strangle and butcher each other. But what for? For someone else's ideas? For these stations? For these tunnels? For mushrooms?
Mushrooms!
The crowd echoed.
What the fuck are you doing?
Letyaga wheezed up at him. You're blowing out cover! Now they'll all start creeping out of here! Artyom embraced the people with his inflamed eyes. So dry and hot. How could he explain to them? How could he get through to all of them? The black balaclavas surfaced like little boys. Miller's errand boys. Now they'd drag him down, off the other people's shoulders. But he mustn't hide now. Now he absolutely had to say everything that he hadn't told them before, through the jammers. Svinolup stood there without saying anything, waiting to see if this half-dead specimen could persuade the others to move away from the stairway. The marksman waited for his command.
We're dying here. We grow tumors, goiters. Everything we have is stolen. Food, we steal it from our children. Clothes, we steal them from the dead. We beat each other to pulp in the tunnels. The reds, the browns, it's all pointless. All of it, brothers, pointless. We eat our own kind in the darkness. We don't know anything. Everyone lies to us. Everyone. What for? To achieve what? But where can we go?
They shouted to him.
Up to the surface. You can leave. You can escape. There's a way out, behind you in the tunnel, a hatch. Go back. Freedom is there. There, climb up and out, and go wherever you like. Yourselves. Live for yourselves. He wants to turn us away from Hansa.
Someone yelled in spite. He saw the black pupils of gun barrels, one, two, staring at him, but he hadn't told the people everything yet. He started hurrying.
You'll be killed for nothing here. You'll be killed, and no one will even know. There's a whole world out there, and we're here, shut in under a lid. We'll all croak, every last one of us, and no one will ever know. It's all pointless. Leave. Don't do this. Go back. Where will we get mushrooms from?
Stooge!
They shouted.
He's a stooge! Don't listen to him, people! Wait!
Artyom waved his hand, and just at that moment someone spat lead at him out of the crowd. The movement of his wave diverted the bullet from his heart. It hit him in the shoulder, the left one again. It jolted Artyom, put him off track, toppled him backwards into the crowd, and the moment he stopped speaking, the crowd immediately forgot everything.
Mushrooms!
Someone howled in a shrill voice.
Mushrooms!
The people groaned. Letyaga managed to drag Artyom out, steady him on his feet, and shield him with his own body, just a second before the crowd moved.
The last time,
Svinolup barked, but the back rows couldn't hear him and couldn't see him. Out